Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate what you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast.
Tom, Georgia State came to town and it was about what you would expect, huh?
Man, they should be happy. They didn't get beat by as many points as they did the first time we played them.
Happy all the way to the bank, right?
Man, I don't know what the paycheck was, but there were times in the game, specifically in the third quarter, which I'll mention the play when we break down the offense. I thought we were watching the Globetrotters when they would take on the basketball team that was just so horrible. I mean, I kind of got embarrassed for these guys in the second half when the Tana Patricks of the world was beating up on them.
Yeah, so Georgia State is our version of the Washington Generals then.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Nice. I read an article today, and they said that both teams from the opening kickoff were trying to run out the clock. I thought that was pretty appropriate.
It was pretty appropriate. Georgia State, you know, as you and I have talked about, right, they wanted to wave the white flag early and say, hey, we're glad to be here. From Saban's standpoint, he got to play 70 guys, I think I heard. I think I heard on his coach's show that 6 running backs ran the ball, 15 wide receivers caught the ball. I've got some thoughts as to why some of wide receivers were not in that list of 15. But all in all, he got to see a lot of guys. And so I think he was happy with that.
Yeah, I think so. And it was, you know, it was very orchestrated, right? I mean, you know, 31 first downs, only 4 penalties, 6 players scored touchdowns. No one scored more than 1. I think that was very orchestrated. I thought that was pretty interesting. We scored on our first 7 possessions. On our 8th possession, we missed a field goal. And then we ended the 9th possession in the victory formation and kneeled the ball. So it was about as well orchestrated of a scrimmage as you could find. So I thought that was pretty neat. Why don't we jump in? You threw off a couple of sparks there. Why don't you jump in with what caught your eye or, you know, observations that you had?
Well, man, I'm just going to get this out of the way first and foremost. Okay, so to our friend Greg, who I lost the bet with at the beginning of the season, I was dumbfounded that we saw so much Blake Sims. I just have to start with this because obviously Coach Saban is way smarter than I will ever be. But on this, man, he is getting it wrong. I don't care how good he looked in the second scrimmage. I know how bad he looked at A-Day game. And I really think we missed a valuable opportunity to get some work for somebody other than Blake Sims.
I will say that I am absolutely surprised at 2 things. I am very surprised that we did not see Alec Morris. I wholly expected him when we brought in, I expected that we would see them anyway. It's kind of going into the day. When we took McCarron out before halftime, I thought for certain that Alec would get, you know, most of the fourth quarter. And so that's the first thing that surprised me. But I'll tell you what, the second thing that surprised me, Sims going 14 of 18 for $130. That's pretty surprising.
It was against Georgia State, man. Was against Georgia State.
Against A-Day, it was a split squad. He couldn't run. He could not run and throw against air.
It's real. But see, against A-Day game, he was throwing off his back foot and throwing a duck for Vinny to go up there and catch and score a touchdown. They don't have any Vinnies in their secondary. And let me just go to the play that I wanted to talk about with the Globetrotters. In the second half, okay, I don't know where we were in the third quarter. We are sitting there with the ball on the 10-yard line. Georgia State rushes 4 guys. We have got our backup offensive line in the game, which I want to mention, talk about the 2s in a minute. He throws the ball in the flats. No pressure to Chris Black. Chris Black has got 2 guys on him. He makes both of them miss. And then the third guy can't even tackle him. And he's smaller than Chris Black at the goal line for him to barrel in for a touchdown. So forgive me. I could have thrown that 10-yard out. I could have thrown that, 5-yard pass to Chris Black in the flats for him to score 5 yards later in the end zone. And so I'm not impressed with that. I'm sorry. It doesn't impress me. And what you saw in the second half was, or just like in the first half when we had a stall drive when he came in the second half when we had a stall series with him in the game, I'm sorry. Blake Sims, you're great. You've meant a lot to the program. You do great for the scout team looks. You made it to the Alabama football team, which I never did, but you are not the guy. And giving him that much work and not giving Alec Morris any reps is the wrong decision. And yep. I can only hope for the Bama faithful that A.J. McCarron does not go down, because if he goes down, we are in trouble.
Well, that's multiple topics there. We're going to hope A.J. doesn't go down, irrespective of who the backup is. But I have to say, I think that you're unfairly piling on Sims for his play on Saturday. If you saw his play in A-Day and you saw his play on Saturday, you can't help but be impressed.
Has he made improvements? Yes. But what I should have said more directly to your statement is, am I surprised he went 14 of 18? Okay. I'm surprised. Okay. Did I expect him to go 9 of 18 against Georgia State? Yes, but it was still Georgia State. So, guys, let's just hold off on praise. It's only Georgia State.
Look, I'm not crowning him next year's starter or anything. I'm looking at this as an isolated sort of event, and I'm comparing it to my last true data sample, which, was A-Day. In all of last season, he participated in 10 games and threw 10 passes. You know, he threw 18 and completed 14 on Saturday. And there were some boneheaded things that he did in A-Day, trying to throw the ball when he was under pressure, just flinging it back foot, horrible mechanics. There's no way against, people standing still, he could not have hit 14 of 18 against A-Day. And so what we saw, again, I'm not crowning him. I am just saying, what he did as a standalone episode on Saturday, I thought was pretty impressive. At the same time, I still expected to see Alec come out and play and participate as well.
I'm very surprised by that. And okay. Saban even said in his coach's show that he brought Blake out at the end of the first half. He said because he wanted to get some work with the ones. Well, you had two backup. You had two backup offensive line in at that point. But still, he said, he might need to be in that situation late in the year or later in the year. And I wanted him to get some work with the ones. And so I've got to say, Greg was right. As much as it pains me, is because that comment right there says, if push comes to shove and AJ goes down, Blake is the guy. So I've got to give Blake credit from that standpoint, even if I don't agree with the coach, obviously, and I don't get to see the practices. Blake has outplayed Alec Morris, apparently, up until this point.
Well, it concerns me.
Right?
You would have to think so, and I guess that's what concerns me. Again, I thought Alec looked okay in A-Day, and if he's regressed and Blake has progressed, then I can see where it nets out, and I see the logic of, if this is going to be the guy, let's get him some reps with the ones. I mean, I see how those dots connect. They logically make sense. But if indeed Sims is the guy, and look, I like him. I like what he's done for the program. I like the role that he has played. If that's the role that he is going to play, I redouble my bet on we need AJ to stay healthy. And that makes me question and entertain elements of concern over next year's starting quarterback even more.
Oh, absolutely. And Coach Saban also said, okay, in his coach's show, that we told the players at halftime that we were going to play the twos from here on. And he said, don't play like a two. You better play up to the standard of Alabama being an Alabama football player, but I want you twos to not play like a two. And so everybody we saw to come out at the start of that second half, for the most part, was who he felt like at the beginning was those twos.
Right.
And once again, it was Blake.
Sure.
And so he has proven me wrong, because Has he improved? Yes, he has improved. I agree with you that I am cautiously, I am reserved in crowning him the number two. I'll say it that way.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
What else jumped out at you on offense?
Well,
you
knew, let me just
you knew I had to start there. I couldn't get that. I had to get that off my chest to start with.
No, absolutely. I got you to, I feel like, you know, budge a little bit on that and at least acknowledge some improvement. So I'll kind of throw you a bone, you know, back for all of his play. And he played, you know, more than a half of football. He did only account, his drives did only account for 10 points.
Yes, you are correct.
So that kind of goes back to your point.
It does. It does. What did you think of the offensive line rotation? That's the other thing that I have to touch on. Our friend Eric that we sit next to in our seats, you know, he referenced the coach's show on Thursday night and what Coach Saban said about Grant Hill on that show. And I just have to say to the listeners that I don't always, you know, go back and listen to the coach's shows on Thursday nights as much as I should. And so when I came out there on Saturday, I had not been feeling well a couple of days before. I was a little surprised to see Grant Hill come out when he did take off his red shirt at the end of that first half, along with Alfonso Taylor. What do you think about the fact that those were the first two guys off the bench and the other three starters stayed in the game with him with them at the time?
Well, it's almost misleading to say that they were the first ones. There's a couple things there, right? It's almost a little misleading to say that indeed they were the first ones off the bench, because Kellen Williams has already played some, and we were going to use him, and indeed did use him as the backup center, and then, you know, which is really to our third team center because Lindsay was out there. So, you know, so that
you get my drift. I'm just saying
I just wanted to qualify that a little bit. I had heard and read that about Grant Hill. He did not dress in the Ole Miss game because he had developed a stomach virus, and there's speculation that he would have played in that game. You know, the reports are that he is fast approaching being one of our top five linemen, and we even, you know,
Saban said that.
Saban said, no, that's
I'm not sure he's not one of my best five. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
True and freshman.
This, you know, some of this goes back to, and, you know, midpoint, near the midpoint in the season, this seems like a long time ago, but in fall camp, there was a lot of high praise. And in our preseason reviews and some of the preseason guide, we talked about him potentially being or earning a spot as maybe being our sixth best lineman. And so the kind of the first one to come in. And so he's now entertaining. And he played split duty there with Shepard for a little bit. And then, you know, when we rotated out the true ones, you know, he stayed out there and got some more reps. I think what it shows, and I saw, you know, Rodney Orr on Tighter Insider, I saw him post this, and I completely agree with it. What it demonstrates is Saban's not afraid to make some changes, and that he knows that who we've got out there, there's some guys that are coming on in practice. All jobs are still open, and we're willing to make some changes, even if that's stripping a red shirt off a true freshman at a position where I want to put this out there, but I haven't done my homework on it. I think that's the first time in Saban's tenure at Alabama that he has actually played a true freshman lineman.
I think so too, but we need to check that before next week's show. But I do think that's the case.
If he's not first, he's the second, right? It's a very rare thing. And certainly, you know, to put one out there and not necessarily in a injury need situation, but an improvement need situation. I thought it was impressive. I thought he played very well on Drake's touchdown, which by itself was kind of spectacular. But on Drake's touchdown, he probably could have been called for holding, but, you know, he got his hands out pretty quick. He looked like he could still even get bigger. So I think this is a guy that Saban feels very high on, and I think we're going to see a lot of him as the season goes on.
Well, I just was surprised because, you know, coming into the fall, Leon Brown, the transfer, was going to step in, and he was going to be the guy to take that right tackle spot. and suddenly pops in Austin Shepherd, right? And Austin Shepherd is battling, you know, with Leon Brown. Well, then you see a Leon Brown come in to back up Cyrus, you know, in the second half, and Grant Hill's on the right side. So I guess I'm just surprised that we would pull a red shirt on that kid. It's kind of like we talked about at quarterback. It concerns me about what I didn't feel like we had such a lack of depth at offensive line as we must have for him to make that call. For him to pull a red shirt off of one of his three true freshmen with all of the guys that we've got. We had 14 offensive linemen, not counting the three freshmen. I'm shocked that he's not comfortable with it. But trust me, from what I've seen in the games, I'm not comfortable with the five. But I'm just surprised that we don't have a five we're comfortable with, that we have to pull his red shirt.
You know, there's an opportunity here to kind of treat this as a half, you know, glasses half full or is it half empty? And I see the point, and I see where you could certainly make, you know, the glasses half empty kind of conclusion. As many recruiting classes as we've had and as many people as we have, it's a true freshman that's going to come in and earn a spot. And I see that line of thought. There's an opportunity to look at it glass half full and say, damn, this guy must be really good, because he is coming in ahead of guys that have some tenure, some time in the system. And by system, I mean not only, you know, in the playbook, but also in the weight room and in the off-season program. So it could be. Now, look, the opportunity or the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But, he must be pretty impressive to come in ahead of some of these other guys.
Oh, sure. And you know, we've talked about Austin Shepherd, right? And we've talked about how we were surprised that he was able to be the guy to win the right tackle job. Obviously, him and Ari had some, you know, they were swapping right after the first or second scrimmage, right? And so he had not even settled there. I've even heard talk, I guess it's been reported, that coaches mentioned that Anthony Steen can even play center if need be. And so it just makes my question to you is if you were to look in that crystal ball of yours and see a starting lineup against LSU, I bet you, my guess is when we play LSU, only one of our current offensive linemen will still be in his same position.
Only one?
Yes.
Well, I was going to make a joke about you peeking at my notes because I wanted to talk about, you know, what's the next move on the offensive line and you know, what do you forecast maybe the starters being later in the season? And that's directly where you're going. What you've done is stumped me by suggesting that we're only going to see one. And so let me take my crack at that. You know, Austin was the starter, so I'm assuming so let me step, you know,
I'm going to make this easy for you. Start at left tackle and come over.
Yes, I'm assuming that Cyrus is the one that that is staying.
Correct.
Probably Austin at the left guard.
Correct.
Steen at center.
Correct. I kind of gave you that one. Yep.
You did. Just because I know the way you like to think, you're going to say Alphonse Taylor at the right guard.
I am.
And then Grant back at the right tackle.
I am.
Okay.
And I could be right on just four of those. I might be wrong on right guard. And I'm not saying Alphonse blew me away, but there's something to be said, in my opinion, everything he does is calculated to the nth degree. There is a reason that those two guys came out at that point in time. Yeah, he already knows what he's got in Steen. Yeah. I think it's key that those two guys came out together on the same series.
You know, the next incremental step that I think is, you know, if you were to ask me what the next move on the offensive line is, I might say that we try Shepherd back at left guard and that Ari, you know, goes to the bench.
And try Grant Hill at the right tackle.
And leave Grant Hill there. I'm not disappointed with what Lindsey's doing at center. You know, and so if you think of Lindsey and Steen versus, you know, Steen at center and Alphonse, I don't know necessarily what the net is. Alphonse would have to be pretty good to disrupt, I think, that many positions. I do think we net keeping Steen where he is.
And that's where I would be three of the five. I could potentially see a Chad Lindsey, right, or a Ryan Kelly maintain center come LSU type of game, and Steen be next to a Grant Hill and Austin Shepherd on the other side next to Cyrus.
I like the prospect of having, and we've talked in this kind of granularity before, I like the prospect if you're going to have a true freshman at that right tackle.
I like having Steen next to him. Yep.
So I think you could do something like that. And then maybe if you are concerned about Ari, and that's something we talked about in the preseason as well, then maybe you try an Alphonse over there.
And I'm going to say I'm not concerned with an Ari, right? He hasn't done anything to – he hasn't done a big wow from the stands with my binoculars. Man, he really blew that up, okay? I don't recall any big whoa play that he's made, okay? I just think that Saban obviously feels like he, you know, all open competition. Maybe he's sending a message. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. Maybe he's just trying to light a fire under a couple people by putting Grant Hill out there. But he's accomplished what he wanted. I wish I'd have been at practice today.
Yeah, I think, I think that's certainly going to motivate some folks. You know, again, I'm pleased with Grant. Him stepping in, and you know, he has to be capable for the coach to take advantage of the opportunity.
Yes.
He's not just going to roll anyone out there and say, oh, I'm creating a competition. It has to be legitimate.
Sure.
And so, you know, tip of the cap to Grant. Again, I thought Lindsey looked good in his first career start. You know, kind of hats off to him. I think he has an opportunity. He's going to grow into the position and get better. So I'm pleased with that. Alphonse Taylor, I thought, looked really good. Now, he got jumpy and got offside once. But he took his guy, on a couple of plays and just drove him just out of the zip code. He is just a mauler. And he's the guy, and we've said this, you know.
So I say for the listeners, you need to remind the listeners who he is.
He's the dude. Now, I was sitting somewhere different for this game. And so I had a chance to kind of tell some of our stories to some other folks. But, you know, Alphonse Taylor's the guy that, last he's a redshirt. And so when we saw him last year as a true freshman standing next to Chance Formack, who, by the way, was a top 11 pick in the NFL draft, he made Formack look small. You know, who is that beast next to Formack? And that was Alphonse Taylor. He's a big guy. I described him during the game as he's the one down there blotting out the sun. That's Alphonse Taylor.
Hey, what else jumped out at you on offense? Come on, man. Give me some DeAndre White talk.
Well, I mean, you know, that's catch of the year, right? I mean, holy wow. How does, you know, that's the best catch, you know, since Julio's catch against San Jose State in 2010. And I don't know if it's not a better catch. They were both one-handed grabs, but to reach to in the air, had the body control to be up in the air. And he's a leaper. He can get up to then contort your body to twist and reach and catch it with one arm and then pull it into your body. That was pretty darn impressive. I think that's certainly a catch of the year candidate.
Man, I am so happy for him, you know, because this guy was really coming on in the first couple games last year, and he's understanding his role, and he's comfortable, and he's doing the little things. I mean, guys, on the first play of scrimmage, okay, as good as Lindsey is coming on, Lindsey and Steen were blocking the nose. Lindsey was supposed to rub off to the linebacker. He does not get over in time. DeAndre White comes over from his slanted out wide to the right. He comes over and does a crackback block on that linebacker in the middle of the field and knocks him on his tail. And he's the reason that Yeldon did the final cutback to rush for 28 yards on the first play from scrimmage.
Yep.
And so my point is Mr. Physical is blocking out in the flats a la Chris John Jones last year. He's making the acrobatic catches, but he's doing the little things and knocking the linebackers, you know, block off, you know, 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. I just love what I'm seeing from this kid. This kid is getting it.
He is. And, you know, I don't want to repeat all our, you know, kind of DeAndrew stories again, but it has been fun to watch him grow up and watch him mature and make plays like that. There are, you know, it's ironic. You know, I think of Drake, right? And talk about Drake, and I don't, you know, we don't have to go into all that those stories again either. But, you know, this is the kind of guy that, hey, grow up, mature a little bit, put some effort in on the plays that are not designed to go to you, and you will get your opportunity.
Yes. And so I just wanted to point out that big block, because that just, to me, you know, that just says complete game. Hey, another nice thing about this is we got to see, you know, the bruisingness from Jostin Fowler. Yep. We got to see the bruisingness from Derrick Henry on a couple 12-yard carries back-to-back. We got to see what Alton Penny brings to the table. We got to see the explosiveness from Drake and his, you know, T.J. Yeldon impression on the, you know, hurling in the air, you know, with the ball.
Yep.
I, from an offensive standpoint, I love that we got to showcase all these different weapons. It was like, here's all our toys, and we get to show them finally at one time.
It was like going to, you know, like when they bring on all the new electronics and you get to see like a car show, right? You get to see everyone's bells and whistles. Well, it's like we designed, it seemed like an orchestrated scrimmage in that we demonstrated or tried to show off everyone's bells and whistles. I mean, specifically, we had 6 guys score touchdowns, and we were pretty insistent, you don't get 2 today. You know, we're going to, you know, Drake.
We will scheme, that will not happen.
Right. And you know, Drake almost got a second one, but he was down at the 1 yard line and we took him out. And it was like, let him score. And we otherwise might, but he wanted to get D Hart a touchdown. And that didn't work, you know, for a couple of reasons. And we had some penalties and that ended up being a kick. But it was just amazing how we were very specific in spreading the ball around. You know, 6 players scored touchdowns. You mentioned 5 or 6 people. Different folks ran the ball. 15 with catches. You know, I'm just repeating some of your stats. But it's pretty. If you look at the stat line, no one was the star per se. No one had 100-yard day. No one had, you know, 2 touchdowns or, you know, just an explosive sort of, you know, stat sheet stuffer kind of day. It was just everyone gets a bite.
Well, it was. And so what's interesting about that is 15 different wide receivers caught the ball, right? So my question
on this a minute ago, who didn't catch the ball?
Well, I mean, are you surprised Amari Cooper was not on there?
Yeah.
He played a decent amount. I mean, let's face it, right? If 15 different guys catch the ball and he doesn't, that was a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah,
he just doesn't look like the same Amari Cooper right now.
And what's interesting to me, and I know how I would answer this question, so I'm going to pitch it to you because you might answer it differently. Why did we roll him out there if we think that maybe he's still recovering from an injury? Maybe he's not 100%. Why do we put him out there?
Man, I was so hoping you were not going to ask me this question. I have no clue. I have no clue. Because if he can't not be 100%, well, that's not true. Because Deion Blue wasn't 100% against Ole Miss, and he just sucked it up and did it. And so we must feel like his injury is that he's getting closer. And that he obviously is not going to regress from being out there and playing. But how you can be in the game, and obviously the ball was thrown to him. Okay, I'm not saying the ball wasn't thrown to him. I'm just shocked that, I mean, we got guys that nobody's ever heard of. I guarantee you none of these listeners have ever heard of Ty Reed. Okay, well, the reason you haven't heard of Ty Reed is he's a senior from Rocky Hill, Connecticut, who is a wide receiver / quarterback on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 6'1", 190 pounds. He got a catch. So to your point, of our car show, why didn't we rev up the engine of Amari Cooper?
Well, I think you know, and you kind of got around to where I would have placed the answer, is that he's not 100%, but it's at a stage maybe in his recovery where he needs to put some exercise on it. But he's probably not gonna injure it again. He's not at risk of further injury. He just needs to maybe get used to playing with some discomfort and just kind of play his way through it. And so maybe we put him in there. It's live action. We don't have to go to you. You don't have to make a superhuman move or play. Let's get out there. Let's run some routes. If you get open, you know, we'll try to toss it to you. And just get him used to maybe playing with some of that discomfort in a situation where we don't need him to have a 100-yard, 2-touchdown game. We don't need him to be Amari Cooper. We just need him to be out there a guy that's maybe going to slant coverage, help open somebody up. We, you know, get out there and be a decoy, get some laps on, some getting used to being with some of that discomfort. And that's really all we needed from him.
I'm with you, man. But
it's an unsatisfactory answer because we don't know. You know, we're not sitting in those meetings. We don't know. It's just that's all I can come up with, right? If he was at if it was a sensitive turf toe where, you know, he steps off the curb wrong and he's done for the season, then he's not out there. But if it's a situation where you know, look, there's going to be some discomfort. It's probably not going to get better before the season's over, but you can't make it any worse. Then let's get on with getting comfortable with it.
Are you surprised we're seeing Raheem Falcons and we haven't seen Robert Foster?
I'm not surprised that we're seeing Raheem. If I were to be candid with you, I would say that I'm surprised we're seeing so little of him. He was here for spring most semester. He was here for spring practice. Robert Foster was not. He was here for all of summer drills. Robert Foster was not.
Right.
He performed well during A Day. Again, an opportunity Robert didn't have. And so it's not a one better than the other. It's just one has had more opportunity to progress through the system than the other. And so, you know, Robert Foster wasn't around until, you know, mid or late July. And so with our depth at the position.
Yep.
And am I surprised that he was not immediately able to crack in? No, I'm not surprised that he wasn't immediately able to crack in. And so you reach a point where you say, look, you're going to be good, but we don't have a spot for you at this stage. So let's just redshirt and go from there. We've got, you know, 3 or 4 guys that are going to be gone. You know, the world is your oyster next year. Raheem, I will say, is a surprise, though, because he played so well in A-Day and he looked like, you know, a big 6'4", tall receiver that with some hops. He looked like a weapon, and we even categorized him this way. This is a weapon that we've not had. This is the type of weapon that we've not had. And so I expected, you know, there's been any a number of times where we've been, you know, in the red zone or knocking on the red zone or, you know, 10-yard line where I have thought, man, Raheem Falcons is the dude to go for here. You know, run the fade to the 6'4" receiver. You know, that type of – and we haven't. So if I were to be surprised, it's not one over the other because their circumstances, I think it's not apples to apples, but my biggest level of surprise is that we're not using Raheem as much as I thought we would.
Okay. Well, I just was curious, given injuries that can present themselves, we obviously have 5 veteran guys and Chris Black would be our number 6 guy on the depth chart right there and Raheem would be 7. So maybe coach just feels like, you know, we don't need to pull the red shirt for that 8th spot. But I that was the other guy that jumped out at me that I was surprised we didn't see. Anything else on offense before we flip to defense?
I really would have liked, you know, when we were allocating touchdowns in the way that we were, you know, I'm going to name some, you know, no way we get all of these guys touchdowns. But, man, I really would have liked Norwood to get one or Bell to get one. You know, Howard, we start averaging, you know, that's 21 extra points. You know, not everyone's going to get one, but it would have been neat to see one of the freshman running backs get one, you know, Tenpenny or Henry. I don't know. You know, that's
one of them would have been nice. Yes.
That's 4 more touchdowns. I mean, I get that that's unrealistic, but, you know, maybe a Norwood or Bell. I would have been pleased to see one of them get one. I don't think I would take one away from any of these guys.
Right.
But I would definitely would have liked to have seen at least one of those guys get one. And I'll say this, one thing that did kind of stand out to me was, and I have it in my notes and I can't find it, but the number of catches that Chris Black got. Six catches, which led the team. It seemed that he and Sims have a little bit of simpatico going on there.
No, I think so. And when you look at the average yards per carry in rushing, you know, this kind of jumped the page at me. TJ Yeldon, only 6 carries, 8.5 yards a carry.
Yep.
Derrick Henry, 5 carries, 10 yards a carry. Kenyon Drake, only 5 carries, 8 yards a carry. And Jostin Fowler, only 3 carries, almost 8 yards a carry. And so this was by far Derrick Henry's best day, right? And so a little coming out party for him. 5 carries for 50 yards with a long of 17 yards was a good showing from him.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the kind of thing, you know, no one's going to win the Heisman based on their performance, you know, on Saturday. It's the kind of performance you could have picked any one of those guys and they could have had a 200-yard day.
Yes.
But we were very intentional. It's, you know, everyone's going to get, you know, a couple snaps. And we kind of want to cap everyone at 50 yards.
But that's nice, right? I love the fact that TJ Yeldon on the carries.
Sure.
Right? We don't need him to get any more than that. And no. So from that stand, and then on the receiving, right, it was pretty intentional here that tight ends, y'all do a lot of the heavy lifting. And, you know, hell, the only thing that would have really set this off is if our big boy could have gotten a catch, that would have been nice. I would have loved to see a little Brandon Green split out, you know, just for kicks and grins and let Blake Sims throw a go route. But, you know, to see Malcolm go up there, go up the ladder and get a ball, and, you know, to see Kurt Freetag get his first catch.
And he showed a little bull to get to that first down.
He did. But literally, we threw the ball to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tight ends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome.
I was just about to say we threw it to 5, and you know, and so we had the opportunity to watch it, you know, kind of live there, and then I went back and watched some of the replay, and I'll say this about our boy Kevin Norwood, because we're always talking about, you know, him getting the first down. He was denied a first down. We threw on a first down, and he got 9 yards. And he was really denied the first down there. You know, when I watched the replay, I thought he had the ball across the marker. And you never would have noticed this if you weren't watching the TV and really paying attention, because it was very, very subtle, even as it happened. And so Norwood, you know, was tackled, got up, handed the ball to the official, turned to walk away, and then did like a 360 to turn around and watch where the official spotted the ball, and the official spotted the ball just short of the marker. And you could see ever so slightly, Norwood just shook his head like, really, really? He just shook his head like, no, that's not where that ball goes. And then he just turned around and walked back to the huddle. And I was like, you know, I like that.
That's hilarious.
He knew that he got the first down and, you know, not going to make a deal of it, you know, kind of in that moment. But it was funny just to see him kind of, and I had it, you know, I had taped it DVR. And so I kind of flipped it back a couple times just to see, did I just see what I thought I saw? Yeah. He kind of shook his head and like, yeah, I got that first down. So
that was hilarious. That was funny. Well, hey, who gets your mini game ball on offense?
Look, I'm giving it to Grant Hill. And I think we've covered kind of most of the bases on that.
Yep.
The fact that he came in a starter, I'm going to say a starter capacity, because he subbed in still with all the ones. If you count him, sort of as a quasi starter, we have played 8 different linemen in the 5, which, and that's not, I'm not counting like when you truly get the backups.
Okay.
And that's a big number. And I thought he acquitted himself very well. You know, again, high praise from Saban. This is a kid that it's going to be interesting to see the snaps and the reps and the performance we get out of him down this October stretch.
Okay. Well, I want to give it to DeAndre White for all the reasons I said earlier, but he is not a mini game ball. But DeAndre White, you played a hell of a ball game. So I'll give it to Derrick Henry.
Okay.
Just because I think we are looking at another future Heisman Trophy winner at Alabama.
Ooh, that's high praise.
I really think that when this kid really gets comfortable about a year from now and really gets his legs under him and the light starts coming on for him and all facets of the game, like DeAndre White, he's going to be unstoppable. I really do. I really feel that way.
No, I think that's awesome. Hey, before we flip the field to defense, I want to remind everyone to go to sccbias.com. If you're listening to what we're saying and you want to contribute to the conversation and join into the conversation, go to sccbias.com. I spend a little bit of time there every day kind of checking up on what the talk and chatter is. So definitely engage us on that site, sccbias.com. Tom, let's flip the field to defense. What jumped out at you over there?
Man, the first thing that jumped out to me was Brandon Ivory. Let me just say, on the one play where he blew up the center and the right guard and made a tackle for loss in the backfield of 3 or 4 yards on the running back, it reminded me of that time that Josh Chapman blew up the center one time. And we were like, where has that been your whole career? And I'm sorry, Brandon Ivory, when he did that, I immediately thought of Josh Chapman. And it was a flash of Brandon Ivory that we need to see for the interior of this defense. And it just jumped out at me.
Well, you're nice. You were nicer to him on that play than I was, because I saw a big body in the backfield making a tackle. And I was like, whoo, A'shaun Robinson again. and when he gets up and it's Ivory, I was like, wow, I didn't expect that out of him.
Well, no, it definitely was. You know, we've given him some praise, and we've said, hey, you've got to step up, it's time to shine, etc. And I think he did that. And you know, on that particular play, you know, he did what you need the nose to do sometimes. And he, you know, he, as far as you, when you look at his stats line on the game, he only had one solo and one assist, and with that one tackle loss. But I just hope that's a thing of signs to come. And the other thing I want to point out real quick is Landon Collins, right?
Yep.
You know, given what happened last week, I was curious how he was going to respond. And he seemed pretty comfortable in the back of the defense.
Yeah, I thought he played well. And I thought Geno played well coming in. And again, they both got some practice time, you know, at that safety spot.
But Landon got the start. Yeah.
Landon got the spot. They both, you know, rotated in. They both played well. Landon's been playing a lot. I think he played a little more. And certainly Geno got some snaps that he hadn't been getting. And we just talked last week that, you know, Geno's a guy that needs to keep his head on and not, you know, get overly disappointed at his loss of playing time, because an opportunity will present itself. Well, hell, we didn't expect it would present itself in that fashion. And
Correct. Certainly
that's not what we had in mind. But it speaks to that. You don't know. You just don't know. And so, you know, we get a screwball event with Ha Ha, and you know, feels like we're, from an administrative organizational standpoint, we're handling it correct, you know, based on media reports. But, you know, sticking with on the field discussion, you know, I thought Geno played well in that role. And, you know, we have a couple games to get it sorted out before, you know, before LSU comes to town.
Now, when you say in that role, you're referring to when he came in the dime look, right?
Yes.
Because what I think is key is that we started the game in a true 3-4, and I was anxious to see who would take the field next to Vinny. And we thought it would, I think we both thought it would be Landon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that says a lot for him, that it wasn't Jarrett Williams, that it wasn't Geno Smith. Now, could it have been Nick Perry if Nick Perry wouldn't have gotten hurt?
Yep.
I don't know. But once again, there's another example of be ready when your number is called, because you never know, right?
Yep.
I can argue it probably would have been Nick Perry if Nick Perry was not hurt in this ball game because of the experience that he brings to the table. And so having Landon,
and that's his position.
Yes.
That's
yes.
his position. And so, you know, we want people to be, you know, trained and experienced and practiced at playing more than one position, but you take a good guy going to another position versus the true number two at that position, you know, the athlete may not be the better performer if that's not his true position.
Sure. And now the other thing I want to point out real quick, right, is the great play of Jarrett Weeps. Mm-hmm. Because the star position, right, is staying in the front half of the defense, right, in
yep.
the first 10 yards or so. So take nothing away from Jarrett Williams, but the fact that Jarrett Williams has come on like he has means in this game and probably in the next few weeks, depending on Ha's situation, which I think is a load of crap, by the way. What, I mean, we always talk about, well, gosh, Justin Fowler is going to come in the game and teams are going to be like, this really is your third or fourth team tailback? What do you think Georgia State was thinking? Geno Smith is your number six DB?
That's,
I mean,
right.
we thought this guy was going to be the number two cornerback.
Yeah,
and right now,
last year's starter.
Yeah, and right now he's your sixth DB. That's scary.
Yeah, it really is, and it speaks to, you know, the depth that we are building. You know, this position, you know, a couple of weeks ago I was, you know, kind of beside myself, and I've sort of recovered from that. And so maybe now I'm swinging the other way. I need to find my balance on this. But it does seem that we're developing some pretty good depth at the position. You know, freshman Eddie Jackson, you can't take
– because of him. We can't take that away.
You can't yes. take for granted yet, you know, what he's doing and just assume nope. that he's going to continue doing that. But I feel very good about his performance. You know, Deion Ballou is the guy that we all kind of forgot about. Now that he's back in there, and he didn't play much. He got in, got some reps, got out. But he's the kind of guy you forget about, and he's kind of the glue that's holding together the secondary. So we don't
yes.
have to play with two young cornerbacks. And hey, Maurice Smith is coming on. So, you know, I think that we do have some good youngsters back there. Hopefully they can continue to solidify this season. And then certainly I look forward to a lot of them really coming into their own next year.
No, absolutely. Hey, when we started in a 3-4, okay, and I understand Jeffrey Pagan, you know, didn't play. Just as interested as I was to see who came in for Ha-Ha, I was surprised that A'shaun Robinson, a little bit, was the guy in for Pagan. And my point is he's been playing, right, in the four down line look beside Brandon Ivory, mm-hmm. or he's been coming in for Brandon Ivory, and he's kind of stepped ahead of Darren Lake, right?
Yeah.
On the playing scale. Are you surprised in that look that we didn't come down with, we talked about Xavier Dixon and whether Xavier Dixon was growing into a defensive end and his hand was in the dirt a lot more than he was standing up so far this year. Are you surprised that he didn't come in other, you know, opposite of Stinson instead of A'shaun Robinson there?
No, I really wasn't. If you look at Pagan, he's a big old boy for an end. And it's like we play a big end, you know, even if we're
like
not
a Richard Seymour defense. Kind of deal.
What's that?
Like the Richard Seymour of the old New England Patriots kind of
yeah,
deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so
yeah.
it's, you know, even when we're not in a two defensive tackle look and we do go with the true 3-4, we do like to have a big end in there. And, you know, Brandon Dietrich at one point and you know, certainly Pagan is a big guy and he could step down. Jesse Williams was an end, you know, his junior year. And so we tend to do that. And so if the smaller outside linebacker slash end had gone down, then we would probably replace him with a like-sized player. I think the big end goes down, so we replace him with a big end. And so that
well, we can't minimize that then and the play that A'shaun Robinson has meant to this team so far as a true freshman.
Well, that's where I was going to go, right? That's sort of the mechanical piece of it. the piece that really kind of inspires it and brings it to life is the play of Ayshon. I mean, he has just continued to come on, and he has really brought something to the defensive line. I thought we would get some of that spark from Lake or Kervin or you know, Ivory was going to have it. Ayshon is the, and even Pagan, you know, just be realistic. I thought he was going to be the breakout defensive lineman. The true spark, the electricity that we're getting from our defensive line, and, you know, and hey, that's not an electric position anyways, but the spark we are getting from that unit seems to be coming from Ayshon.
Well, Ed Stinson is your Brandon Dietrich. He is your steady Eddie.
Sure.
And we always have one on every Saban team.
No, that's fair.
And he is that guy that is just nothing but consistent, and he's quiet. He's not an outgoing type of guy. At least he doesn't seem like that on the field. I'll say it that way. And to your point, Ayshon Robinson, so far to me, I would agree with you, has been the wow factor on the defensive line, which I definitely thought it was going to be Pagan. What else jumps out at you on the defensive side of the ball?
I like seeing freshman Tim Williams get after the quarterback.
Man, he was very aggressive, wasn't he? Now we can see why they can't keep him off the field. Now we can see why they blew the red shirt.
Yeah, I absolutely. You know, he's going to continue to get some reps, continue to get after the quarterback, and you know, he's going to be a bigger time contributor, I think, before the season's over. Again, I was flat wrong in identifying him or pegging him for a red shirt.
Hey, what did you like to get to see a little Reuben Foster for a little bit longer than a play?
Ooh, man, I don't know which direction you're going to go on this, but let me just ask you this question. If you spotlighted his play, who did he remind you of?
Man, I'll have to think about that. I was a little mixed in what I saw. He did not see, it's still early. He did not seem very comfortable out there. I was surprised that he came in when he did, from the standpoint of it was a unique number two combination, right? Because it wasn't Tanner Patrick. Your right. Second defensive, your second inside linebackers. I mean, you and I would not have guessed it was going to be Dylan Lee and Reuben Foster.
No.
We made the comment that if Dylan Lee keeps headhunting like he's doing on kickoffs, he's going to get some playing time. But we did not think that they were going to be your twos that played most of the third quarter.
No.
So I did not think that he would. I thought he got a little bit more comfortable as the game went along, but it definitely probably wasn't what he expected to be of his first game performance. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, I think I don't disagree with that at all. He reminded me, he ran himself out of plays. He ran himself into his block. Looked really good in uniform, the gloves and the tape and the neck roll and then kind of runs the next play and I thought, man, I'm going to say this out loud.
Don't do this.
I don't want to say this out loud, but he reminded me of Drill Harris.
Oh my goodness. You did not just say what I think you said.
I did just say that, and I've got,
dude, you need to wash your mouth out with soap as soon as this damn podcast is over. I cannot believe you. Don't ever cut on me again for giving crap to the players. That might be the worst ever, man. You cannot do that.
I want to do, two things. I've got pictures. And so go to the show notes and see just, you know, if the presentation doesn't strike you. I'll say this.
Not going out with you after any football game for the rest of the season.
I'll say this. And this may be as jackassy or worse, but there are fans that are probably listening to the show saying, why is that a bad thing?
Dude, let's just go to the next topic, okay? Let me just say that I felt bad for John Fulton. I think I was hoping to see some rebounding from him when he got his opportunity to come out there. And I just felt like he was still struggling a little bit. And, you know, I just hope he can rebound and just contribute to some depth in the secondary, you know, as the season wears on.
Yeah, I think that's how it has to be packaged. I think that's how that has to be said. One thing that, and you know what, I'll admit that I'm a couple weeks late on saying this, but it is sort of solidified in my head the subsequent, and so it took a little bit of time. How ironic is it that last year and we've talked about this, you know, last year's A&M game, we needed Geno in that game.
Yes.
And didn't have him. And then he played almost every snap the rest of the whole year. And then kind of really, you know, became who he was. Well, we didn't know it because, you know, so at the time of the A&M game, we didn't know really Geno, and we didn't know that we needed him until we see him after the fact, right? And so kind of in the same situation, the same scenario against A&M this year, we needed freshman Eddie Jackson.
Yes.
And since that game, he's played in every game. And so yes. What is it? And it's a rhetorical question, or the answer is Johnny Manziel. But what is it about A&M that helps us uncover our needs in the secondary?
Because they're not scared to do what everybody else is scared to do.
Because they blister the living tar out of us.
No, they're not scared to test us on the edges.
Right.
I mean, even in this game, right, if I'm Georgia State and I have nothing to lose and I know that Eddie Jackson is a true freshman that has just got a start against Ole Miss. And I know even in the Ole Miss game, they didn't really test him deep, right? Mm-hmm. I got nothing to lose. I've already cashed my check at the bank. It's good.
Right.
I would have tested Eddie Jackson two or three times until he picked off one or two. And then I'd have said, okay, well, now I'll do some dinks and dunks. But they didn't even test him.
Well, they went after him a time or two. And they actually got some completions against him. But not deep. They didn't. They couldn't go deep because the quarterback doesn't, you know, wouldn't have had time.
You asked me the question about Texas A&M. It's because they are willing to do what no other team is willing to do, and they're willing to test the corners on the edges. And they're able to because their quarterback's able to improvise. But we regress. Anything else on defense before we award some game balls?
I'm just gonna throw this out here. When Manziel, you know, flames out in the NFL, we need to hire him to come in and be our permanent scout team quarterback, so we can figure out our DB situation in preseason and we don't have to nearly lose games to do it.
That was a good one. That was a good one. I like that.
All right. Very good.
Who what else on defense before we do game balls?
Well, we have to do our, you know, we started the segment last week. We have to do the Mosley report.
Absolutely, man. I'm ready for it.
You know, six tackles, two for loss, just explosive plays, you know, everywhere.
Six tackles and only about 10 plays, right? He was only in there for a few plays.
He wasn't in there for a whole lot, but he made his presence known. He had twice as many tackles as sort of the next guy up, and he blew up some plays in the backfield. You know, a couple of blitzes. Man, he looked every bit the star that we classify him as.
He did, and he came in and just did enough, right? And then stepped to the side and let these young guys get in there. You know, he just shows a maturity about himself with the way he plays. And, you know, he just comes to work. He's that lunch pail kind of guy. He just does his job and that's it.
Yeah. He is reflective of the, you know, sort of the mentality and character and work ethic that his parents instilled into him. And that's the kind of football player he is. But he's not, you know, in kind of in the cliched sense, you know, the lunch pail player. I mean, he is a legitimate star. He just has an everyman mentality about him.
Oh, absolutely. And hey, you were talking about this defense. I got to go back to this for a quick second. Granted, we played a lot of guys, right? But did you see who was second on the top in tackles? On the stat sheet, that is. D Hart.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, no. Hang on. Put a pin on that, right? Because we didn't
We can put a pin on that. I'm just saying, because they log special team plays in with the defensive stats under tackles, that shows you how many different guys really played.
Yeah.
Because second in tackles was D Hart.
No, I'm absolutely with you. But just put a pin on that.
Interesting.
Because I want to mention him in special teams. That's where he got those tackles. So
I'm with you.
Let me hit you up. Anything else on defense? If not, give me your mini game ball.
No, I'm ready for mini game ball, and I'm going to surprise the devil out of you with this.
You know what? You're not, because I don't know who the heck
you I'm can't guess it. Yet. Come on, guess it. I guarantee you can't guess it.
I'm not. No.
My mini game ball goes to Anthony Orr,
okay,
who is a junior on the squad team from Madison, Alabama.
Yep.
And Anthony Orr, the reason you get my game ball, dude, is because, once again, you're another player that has done what I have not done, has made it to college football, and you go out there and wear yourself out, play after play, practice after practice. You got your opportunity to come into the game. You got on the stat sheet. You made a play. Good for you. You got yourself in the Alabama record books.
No, that's awesome, because he's been a guy that you know hasn't really been able to crack the rotation and earn some playing time. So it's a phenomenal opportunity for him to get out there and get some good run. He was out there for a good while, got a tackle. So I think that's fantastic. Excited for him to have that opportunity. There's a lot of different ways you could go on mini game ball, and these are truly like the very mini game balls, because we did play so many guys that you know, normally you have your headliners and then there's somebody just kind of tucked in the middle there that's almost an obvious pick, and there is no such animal. You know, I was thinking for a little bit, you know, I'd go with Tim Williams, but you know, we talked about him. I think I'm going to go, you know, I don't know. It could be anyone. It could be no one. I think I'm going to go with Brandon Ivory. For what we've talked about, the fact that he got out there and showed us and hopefully himself that, hey, he can do some of this. And you have to factor in the quality of opponent, and I understand that. But, you know, hopefully he gets addicted to making some tackles in the backfield. And, look, Terrence Cody didn't fill up the stat sheet either. You know, Brandon Ivory's stat line, one tackle, you know, two tackles – That's Cody on a big stat day. Cody could just take the man, the double team and push the center into the backfield. And we need some of that. We need some of that. And Ivory is as good a candidate as anyone, just given his size and certainly his position. So hopefully we'll see more of that as the season goes on. And so I'm going to kind of give him a nod and some positive reinforcement in that direction.
Absolutely, man.
Talk to me about special teams.
Well, man, first of all, I think the Georgia State kicker had a little problem with his direction because, man, he kicked a heck of a lot of punts out of bounds. We, unfortunately, I think there was four out of his seven that I counted. So he had two touchbacks in the end zone, four out of bounds, and one he only got barely in bounds, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he almost had five out of seven out of bounds. What a stat line that would be. But, man, that one that he barely missed, you know, he wishes he would have got out of bounds, because D Hart fielded the ball where he shouldn't have. He should have let it go out of bounds. I guess he just said, what the you know what, and turned in a spectacular return. And when you go back and slow-mo it, you know, not to throw my boy Derrick Henry under the bus, but you know, Derrick Henry hadn't blocked a lot on punt returns. Maybe he didn't do that all of his high school career.
Right.
And so he was sitting there trying to make a block on a smaller DB and was really struggling at it. And had Hart not, you know, tripped up on his feet, man, he would have scored a touchdown there.
Yeah. It blocking, I think, in general is something that Den Henry has struggled with. Picking up pass protection, certainly. Is you know, something that he struggled with, and so getting out there and doing that, I can't say I'm surprised that you know, and I agree, that's probably not something that you don't lead the nation, and in fact rewrite all of the high school record books nationally rushing and be a master blocker at the same time. you kind of get the pass on that.
You do, but my point is it goes back to your Kevin Norwood comment, okay? Because when you slow-mo the tape, Hart jumps up, and he looks at Henry like, man, like he wants to blame Henry, but he can't really blame Henry because he tripped on Henry's feet.
Yeah.
But he still looks at him like, man, really?
Yeah.
And then he walks off the field.
Yeah.
Maybe he realizes, okay, I'm a small ass little guy and he's a big guy. And so I'm just going to go off the field.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny.
Yeah. I'll let coaches take care of this one.
Talk me about some, on the fumble that he caused on the kickoff return.
I want to do this before we do that. You were talking about their punter. And so I have to, again, you know, there's some things you see when you watch it live that you can't see on TV, and some things you can see on TV that you can't see when you watch it live. And so, you know, they both have their advantages. And so one thing I saw on watching the replay, and I only bring this up because you talked about the punter kicking the ball out of bounds so many times. And so, you know, one of the many times that he kicks it out of bounds, and, you know, it's hard to tell where he kicks it out of bounds. And so the official has the ball and he's running up the sideline. You don't know where he's going to stop to mark the ball. And so he's running up the sidelines and he marks the ball, and then he sharply turns and has just a harsh look on his face, and a camera pans out and there's a Georgia State coach standing there, and the Georgia coach says something, and the official turned like, who am I going to tee up? Who am I going to flag? Throw a flag. He just has a real harsh look in his face. He jerked his head over to kind of look at what was said. And the Georgia State coach has a grin a mile wide on his face, and he's shaking his head like, my punter sucks. And the official looks at him and he smiles too. it was just funny. Like, what did he say that got the official to just turn his head like, so I'm going to get somebody? And then just on a dime, with the coach's expression, the official knew that he wasn't talking to me.
Right.
So, well, I got a kick out of that.
No, it is funny. And for the listeners, man, just to highlight his first four punts, right? Because I'd have no hair if I was the coach just with this punter. His first punt was 32 yards out of bounds. His next one was 23 out of bounds. Then he boomed 65-yard touchback. And then he comes back with 36 yards out of bounds.
Yeah.
This first four punts.
Yeah. We had a kicker we called Wild Thing. And
oh my God.
It's I guess that fits in that category. Hey, you know, you asked me about Dee Hart, and look, I wanna avoid that for another second to kind of hit another point. I think we are seeing special teams across all facets, you know, and maybe not field goal kicking. I don't know. But across, you know, when we think of our return units and especially our coverage units, it's about as good as I recall ever seeing it. I mean, we're playing some fantastic special teams. And when you look at the diversity of people making plays, and so, you know, Dee Hart, you know, went down there and caused a fumble, you know, put his head right on the ball, and that ball just popped out, and Dylan Lee was right there. Well, Dylan Lee laid some wood this week and laid some wood last week. You know, Vinny is a headhunter on special teams. Landon Collins has been a headhunter on special teams. You know, we've seen Dee Hart. It seems we have multiple people that have no problem with charging down the field and lighting somebody up. I am probably most impressed with our coverage teams, but I think across the board, I'm pretty pleased with our special teams play this year.
Oh, absolutely. And even on our punt return, right? We started off the year with Kenny Bell and DeAndre White, and now we have seemed to have found a rhythm with DeAndre White and Landon Collins. They've kind of secured the gunner positions.
Yep.
And so when you look at those two guys, it just epitomizes Nick Saban and what he does on special teams. And I can't remember where the quote was, but it was talking about most teams, right? They use walk-ons at those positions.
Yeah.
Not Alabama. They use their 4- and 5-star guys. And so to your point about the, you know, this comfort level with special teams, you know, having so many veteran wide receivers who are playing on special teams, having the guys, you know, the guys that are the D Harts and the Landon Collins and the Ha Ha's who have been on special teams. I mean, let's not forget, right? Ha Ha was a five star. D Hart was a five star. Landon Collins was a five star. So the point is, you've got guys that was the best at their position in high school football who probably never played this in high school, given this kind of effort for Coach Saban because he asked them to. How awesome is that?
No, I think that's incredible. And he asked them to, and he very, very clearly can speak the language of, this is what will help you keep a roster in the NFL. And so I think these guys.
That has to be it. That has to be it. Because otherwise these guys are like, I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is, you know, and heck, you know, any of us can go watch, you know, Hard Knocks on HBO. But when you got a long time, look, he was head coach for a couple seasons, but he coached, you know, in the NFL for a number of years. And we have other folks on our staff that have as well. And he can very, you know, very clearly, very crisply say, and you know, and he has speakers come in all the time with NFL experience, you know, hey, the simplest truth, the easiest way to make an NFL roster is special teams.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you can play a position and contribute on special teams, dude, you are gold.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that goes a long way in selling, you know, that opportunity to some of these guys that are otherwise just stars.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. He's just speaking to them, building their resume and being able to do that.
Yep.
Hey, anything else out on special teams?
You know, I like the kick that Cade made, and then, you know, it was interesting. We put Griffith in there, and he missed, and so that does not make me feel any better about our kicking situation. And then Cody, he had a good punt, and then we downed it at the one again. So that's 2 weeks in a row that we've found one, you know, inside the two or three.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's huge.
And then the week prior, we had one that could have been down, should have been down, but we just weren't looking for it in the right way. And so that's 3 weeks in a row that the punter has done his job and getting a ball down at the one. Just the gunner couldn't do it 1 week, and 2 weeks they could.
Well, right. That makes you feel good. That makes you feel good that it was 3 weeks ago that occurred.
Yep.
Because that has definitely been coached up since then.
Absolutely. What do you think next week? Anything else on special teams?
No, I think I'm good there.
What do you think next week on traveling to Kentucky?
Man, I think we're catching Kentucky at a good time. I think they're going to, you know, I think that they're on their way to improving their program. I think they got the right guy at the right time. I'm just glad we're catching them, you know, 6 weeks into his regime in Kentucky. You know, last time we played there, you know, it was a, you know, it was a 38-20 ball game, and yep. The game was put away early. I see a situation where, you know, hopefully we don't see a lot of the first string guys after the third quarter, but I do think it's going to be another game, quite frankly, where both teams are running out the clock, and Kentucky's doing it for obvious reasons. And we're doing it just because we want to get some stuff on film and get some guys some reps and get an SEC win and move on. And so I think this is going to be a workmanlike effort that, you know, if we come away with a 31-10 ball game, I think we're going to be happy with that.
Okay. Okay. I agree with a lot of what you've said. This is our three consecutive SEC game stretch. You know, we've got these guys, we've got Arkansas, and then we've got Tennessee. You know, this is the Alabama self-improvement month, as we branded it in our last podcast. And so I think we kind of continue that theme. I think we play well. I think we start to, you know, I think Saturday we pulled a lot of things together, you know, even more than we did against Ole Miss. And, you know, again, it was a lesser opponent. But I think we continue to build, you know, kind of week by week on what we're seeing. I'm looking at a 38-6 style ball game. You know, maybe, you know, I think Kentucky will be a little more successful at some of the ball control than Georgia State. You know, it's an SEC, you know, team. So they're going to have a higher caliber of athlete. I still think, I think we ramp it up a little bit. We go to our stars a little bit more. And I think we hang a 38 on them, and I think we hold them to six. That's what I'm looking for.
Man, I will be happy if either one of our scores come to fruition.
No, absolutely. If you agree with what we're saying or you disagree and want to engage us on any of these topics, I strongly encourage you to go to secbias.com, set you up a free account there, and look for us, Alabama Football Podcast. We're out there communicating, discussions with the fans and the moderators on the board. So we strongly encourage you to go. They're one of our, in fact, our first sponsor. So go out there, support them for their efforts in supporting us. And then I also want to double down on the challenge that we put out there. Leave us a review on iTunes. Again, it doesn't have to be a five-star, just authentic. And Tom, we got five reviews in the last week. We got five-star reviews in the last week. And so I want to kind of share a couple of them with you. Mill9657. Fantastic podcast for the Alabama fan that likes getting detailed analysis. You know, they appreciate the effort that we're putting into it. DEAMOK. I'm not sure if that's DMOK or DEAMOK, but either way is cool. I love this comment. So it's a must, you know, in-depth review of each game for the Alabama fan. I have fans of different teams that have listened to the show and are aggravated that their school doesn't have this. Keep up the good works.
That's funny.
That's pretty cool, right?
That is cool. I like that.
Hey, you know what? And I would put ourselves in that boat, you know, because we're not affiliated with the university. We're just two guys that like talking football. And so we've just done this, right? And
absolutely.
So, you know, Deem, I would tell your fan, your fellow fans that they can be aggravated, but then they need to take action on that. And they can be the guy.
Absolutely.
You know, that does this, because that's kind of, that's what we've done, right?
And absolutely. So that's cool.
Man of War fan one, thanks so much for the podcast. You're welcome. I like the local perspective on things, and the opinions are very close to mine. Sounds like a really smart guy. I love how you guys give some attention to the players a little lower in the rotation and depth chart. I think we did a lot of that today, so that's cool.
Yeah,
helps with the fans that are a little far away. I like that. Photog Dave, I promise this is not me, but he said he came here specifically to rate and review the show based on the challenge that we left in the Ole Miss podcast. So I am confirming that that challenge is live and well. We're up to 28 reviews, and I want to get 50 by the end of the season. So I don't know if I'm just being a jerk today, but get off your can and leave us a review. I'm just playing.
All righty then.
I don't know.
Hey, we do have some emails from the listeners after the last show. Do we want to touch on any of those emails real quick before we go?
Yeah, let's definitely do that. Let me hit one more. DC0110, the best in-depth Alabama podcast, hands down. Every week he looks forward to listening to it. Keep up with the good work. So we certainly appreciate that. Yeah, roll us off some emails.
Man, I just wanted to mention the one from our pal William. We touched on this at the beginning of the show, but he says he wants to give a mini game ball to Blake Sims for convincing Saban that Blake is Alabama's second best quarterback. And he says, AJ, please don't go down. I did not write that. That's just from one of our listeners.
Weigh in on that.
Blake Sims, as I said earlier, has proven himself to Coach Saban, who I think is the best college football coach in the country, that he is the next best guy to run his offense. And for the first time since Blake Sims has been here, he didn't do any of the zone read stuff very much, okay? Because as somebody said, reporting on AL.com, the guy could have rushed for 200 yards in the second half if he would have just been able to zone read to death, right?
Yep.
He could have packed the stat sheet, okay? And I am going to say, just so you know that I am impartial and I try to be fair, there was a play where he rolled out in the right flats because the protection was abysmal. And we did not touch on all of the second string offensive line, who I do not think and hope see the field anytime soon. And on the run, he threw a bullet to free tag, right, on his big 11-yard play. It's the best star I've seen the guy throw in his career. And so he did work the offense. He did the offense that was called, and he showed that he can do the offense. My only question is whether he can show that consistency of putting those plays together when he's on the field against an LSU, or he's on the field against a Tennessee, or he's on the field against a Georgia. That's where my concern is.
Okay. All right.
There's another one there from our buddy Steve, who just wanted to simply know, would Colin step in for Ha-Ha, or would it be Jarrett Williams? And you mentioned that you felt like Geno would be the, you know, that you feel like you'd see more Collins and Geno. And we kind of touched that on the podcast, but that's just another email from one of the listeners, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so we're asking for these reviews on iTunes, and we certainly do appreciate them. We want to acknowledge them at least as a way to say thank you and sort of re-engage, engage with you on that.
Ask us questions and emails too.
Yeah, ask us questions and emails, and I'll tell you this: we will probably surprise you with the rate at which we'll respond to your emails and engage you with our emails. You can go to kind of surf our site a little bit. We've got some full, multi-hundred word written articles that are the direct derivative of email questions that have come in that we've we've responded to the question that way and said, hey, you know what? That's a pretty good bit of content. Let's put that on the site. And so reach out to us via email. You know, we're live people. We're going to interact with you in that way. I think some people have commented that they've been surprised with us getting back to them. And so we're there. We look forward to it. We want that, right? We want, the questions, the engagement, the comments. So somewhere where we can improve. So whatever it is, we want to engage with you guys because, it's fun and it's more fun, when we can share it interactively with you guys. So we encourage you certainly to do that. Tom, I'm looking forward to this next game. We've talked about it. Do you have any other elements you want to hit up, or you want to close them down today?
No, man, I just think, this is a team that comes in. They've got a lot of challenges facing this Alabama team. They're not ranking high in the stats categories on either side of the ball. I want to come in, establish the run. I'd love to see who our starting five is in the offensive line. We could be surprised there. And keep AJ clean for as long as he's in there, and let's just chalk up a win.
Absolutely. I think that's the objective. Get him in and get him out, right?
Absolutely.
This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll tide.